Bring Greg Carpenter on here, the host of Reverse Deception Radio, the author of the book Reverse Deception. All of you should have a copy of that. And of course, just an international man of mystery. Mr. Bond, thank you for taking some time out this morning. Brother, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you, sir?
I am, I'm kind of excited, then I'm kind of confused. But as you are, I mean, you wrote the book, Reverse Deception, on this. I immediately thought of you when I was reading the story last night and then this morning. And I'm glad that you are available. Have you heard of this particular... Have you ever heard of this particular guy, David Charles Grusch?
No, not him specifically. But I've learned a little bit about him in the last few days. But another guy coming forward. You know, it's interesting about these revelations that people are having. And now they feel empowered to come out and talk about some secret government program. I find it interesting because a lot of these folks have been, like, hiding, doing all this work for years. And now they're compelled to come out. I wonder what the motivation is here to bring this story forward at this very time.
So you suspect the timing?
I do, because we're getting into a presidential cycle again, right?
So, are we
ongoing election cycle?
Let me ask the first question: are we witnessing that? Is this a reverse deception?
There's a good possibility. You remember William Casey, former CIA director's first meeting, cabinet meeting with Ronald Reagan in 1981. He said, "We'll know our misinformation program is succeeding when everything the American people believe is a lie."
So today, in other words.
You're living his dream.
So they have achieved their goal, finally.
Oh, I think they've been there for a while now.
Yeah. All right, Greg, let's go through some of the details on this, and you'll get your commentary on it. In accordance with protocols, Grusch provided the Department of Office pre-publication and security review at the Department of Defense with the information he intended to disclose to us. Now, this is, again, the debrief.org. His on-the-record statements were all cleared for open publication on April the 4th and 6th of this year. So the reporters are saying, look, the guy... We're not busting any story that is top secret. That's what I just translate that for you. Grusch's disclosures and those of non-public witnesses under new protective provisions of the latest defense appropriations bill signal a growing determination by some of the government to unravel a colossal enigma with national security implications that has bedeviled the military and tantalized the public going all the way back to World War II and beyond. For many decades, the Air Force carried out a disinformation campaign to discredit reported sightings of unexplained objects. Now, with two public hearings and many classified briefings under its belt, Congress is pressing for answers. Carl E. Neal, a recently retired Army colonel and current aerospace executive who was the Army's liaison for the UAP Task Force from 2021 to 2022 and worked with Grusch there, characterized Grusch as beyond reproach. So what they're saying here is that this guy is he's up and up. His credentials check out. He actually does hold the title that he says he holds, and he actually has seen and sworn affidavits or whatever to the vehicles that he says are of non-human origin. And all the stuff that you have covered and all the stories that you have chased down here, almost 100 episodes of Reverse Deception here on radio. You wrote the book. You've been in Army intelligence for decades, Greg. Have you ever actually seen a vehicle?
No, I can't say that I have, but I don't know what that means, a vehicle, because In the big picture, I know what a vehicle is, right? I am dumb, but I'm not that dumb. But I can't.
Don't sell yourself short.
You're quite a slouch, Judge. Yeah. just in January alone, the Arrow office, who is called Kirkpatrick, the director of the Arrow office, said, we don't have any data that shows that these unidentified anomalous phenomenon are from an alien source. And so you have people that are coming out that are propped up as beyond reproach. I get that. I appreciate that. But there are still needs to control the story.
Okay.
From the side of the government. So it's kind of like a controlled release, like you release the pressure from behind a dam, right? You don't let all the water go at once. And I think there's probably something there, considering how much noise and activity is going on right now. I don't know what that is, but it seems that there's something happening, and there's something that the government's going to release, but they want to do it in a way that doesn't overwhelm the general population, as they like to call it in the community, the intelligence community. You're known as the general population, by the way. That's how they kind of look at your average citizen.
We're the general population? Is that what you said?
We're general population, like in the federal penitentiary. Yeah.
Right. We're the plebs. We're the unwashed masses. We're the hoi polloi.
I think that's accurate, yes.
Well, here, let me just read you this from the story, Craig, because I think this explains what you just said. Christopher Mellon, who spent nearly 20 years in the U.S. intelligence community and served as the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, has worked with Congress for years on unidentified aerial phenomena. Quote, a number of well-placed current and former officials have shared detailed information with me regarding this alleged program, including insights into the history, governing documents, and the location where a craft was allegedly abandoned and recovered, Mellon said. However, it is a delicate matter getting this potentially explosive information into the right hands for validation. This is made harder by the fact that, rightly or wrongly, a number of potential sources do not trust the leadership of the All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office established by Congress. Are you familiar with the All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office?
I am.
Okay.
I do know them. So as the former chief of special space up at the National Security Agency, I worked with their predecessor, and I worked with a couple of other activities that are associated with space security.
Okay. Switching gears on the same subject here with Gregory Carpenter, who is the author of Reverse Deception and the host of the Reverse Deception radio series. Some of them are playing right now at CrusadeMax.com. Greg's work on They Tested Them on Us, the four-part series on American bioweapons programs that nobody is supposed to know about. That's a must-listen. And the four-part series on TWA Flight 800, which was early on in the existence of the Crusade Channel, both now playing at CrusadeMax.com. A friend of mine, I consider him a friend and a colleague, Paul Thigpen, just came out with a book. I interviewed him a couple of months ago. The book is called Extraterrestrial Intelligence and the Catholic Faith. Are We Alone in the Universe with God and the Angels? Now, part of Thigpen's work is purely reverse deception, nuts and bolts, investigative journalism stuff. Part of it is theological, but the whole first part of it is, okay, let's go over what we know, what has been said, what the facts are, et cetera, et cetera. And I believe that, and I interviewed Paul, I believe it's Paul's opinion that we are not alone. That's just his personal opinion. You know, anyway, when I had him on the show, Greg, there were some people in the Crusader Stadium chat room that lost their marbles over what Paul was saying about the extraterrestrial life and not little green men, but the existence of it on other worlds here. It seems to me, though, that this discussion has reached a new level because Paul Thigpen is not a lightweight in intellectual Catholic circles. I don't know if you know of him, but he's written like 50 books. For Paul Thigpen to wade into this, and now we have these reports coming out, and we have airline pilots that are former U.S. Naval officers. You know, we're saying, like, look, I know what I saw. That thing was not there. It came out. We saw it. It was on our radar, et cetera, et cetera. Are we in an era here where of discovery, Greg, where we're actually going to find out if Fox Mulder was right?
Well, as the general population, I think we're at a point of discovery. I believe there's other people that have a better handle on what's going on, whatever that is. And I think that if there is something like this, if there is some type of alien life form that is visiting us or sending probes or whatever it is, if something like that really is going on, then it is a kind of a watershed moment for religion in general. And depending upon how you want to look at that and what that means to you or to anybody else. But it does kind of change the picture of theology in that people have to reconsider what they've learned and really take a deep dive into it. I'm not saying that anything's right or wrong. I don't even know, but I'm just thinking logically about it. If there is something else that enters into the equation that, you know, has never been there before, you obviously have to consider that for sure.
We ran a sermon, and it's now playing at CrusadeMax.com from Father Philip Wolfe. And he was talking about our Lord's two natures, and he said, look, there are a couple of things we need to get scientifically correct in the physical world or in the world in which we live. There are three kinds of beings. There's a divine being. There's God, the Holy Trinity, because it was Trinity Sunday last Sunday. There are the spiritual beings, pure spirit, angels. And then there are the created beings, us, right? Or the or humans. Thigpen's point is that God could create whatever he wanted. And what if he did create another race? What if they're actually humans? What if they're actually humans on Alpha Centauri? And he just didn't tell Moses, is his point. Now, Moses, you know, there's certain things you don't need to know. These are theological questions, I think. But the physical discussion here with this latest report here, and I'm also thinking of this, Greg. We have now playing at Crusade Max a 30-minute long CBS news piece that was authored by Edgar R. Murrow. This guy was out in 1958, and he did this special piece for CBS News because he investigated this new phenomenon that was very new in the 1950s called UFOs. And the first part of the piece is him identifying who the guy was that invented the term flying saucer. And the guy was like a barber or something. And it was just in his description of it. But Murrow basically comes to the conclusion in 1957 that the whole thing is just completely and totally fabricated and made up. Are you familiar with Murrow's report?
Not the report itself. I am familiar with the CIA supporting efforts to refute UFOs. I forget exactly what, I think it was 54 or 55, they bought the Inquirer and they started running all of these UFO articles in it. And it lasted all the way through the mid-80s, late 80s or so, when they started to lose their influence with the magazine, let me put it that way. So they were refuting it for, you know, 30-something years, making it look like it was just ridiculous. So for them to put a lot of effort, a lot of money and effort into calling it something ridiculous makes you go back to it and say, okay, well, why would they put that much time and effort into something to say that it's really not happening? You know, the number of incidents went up sharply after we tested our first nuclear bomb.
Isn't that interesting?
Sightings have gone through the roof since that moment. And there's an unclassified map that's out on the internet now. I was shown a copy of it not that long ago, where there are UFO sightings around nuclear sites, nuclear power sites, and nuclear testing facilities themselves. And the numbers there, it's like they kind of conglomerated there at certain times. Not all the time, just at certain times. So it's kind of interesting to see the phenomenon of the activity from the general public as far as what they're seeing and what they're saying at the same time as we're having specific types of testing or activities go on.
That is very interesting. Let me just take you to another part of this. I was listening to an episode of Art Bell. We now run Art Bell. We have all Art Bells. If it was recorded and Art Bell's on it, we have it, including the seven interviews they did with Father Malachi Martin. I was listening to this Saturday, and he was talking to a woman. I'm trying to remember her name. Her name is Linda. Oh, golly. I cannot remember it to save my life. Linda. In any event, they were and he had this other guy on, and they were talking about Area 51. And this was in, so this show was Art Bell's Dream, Dream World or Dream, what do you call it, Dreamscape. I am a terrible runner, program director, because I can't remember the name of anything this morning.
I think you're talking about Dreamland.
Dreamland, Art Bell's Dreamland.
Yeah, that's the name of the site, right.
Okay, so they were talking about, my point on this was that there was this whole institution that sponsored the Art Bell program going back to the early 90s, the Something Institute. I'm trying to remember the name of it now. And all they did was look into it, raise money. They raised millions of dollars, was raise money to investigate Roswell, Area 51, and the government's cover-up program on UFOs. Now, here we are in 2023, and we now have government officials in the United States Congress holding hearings on this stuff. So was Art Bell right all along?
So I think you're talking about Art Bell talking with Linda Howe.
Linda Howe, that's it. Thank you. Linda Howe, that's who he was. She was very knowledgeable. I don't know if she's credible, but she certainly knew an awful lot about the subject.
Yes, she did. So, yeah, there's a reason why that area up there by Croom Lake is called Dreamland, from what I understand. It seems to be a crazy place, and it's worth trying to identify what's going on up there in that area. I always thought it was, I know it's important to do research and, you know, not have our quote adversaries know what our research is so they can't counter it and stuff. But my goodness, when you have people that come out of Dreamland, I mean, there's several class action lawsuits against the government because people were exposed to stuff up there, and it's killing them. And the government pretty much hasn't paid on any of those.
Yeah, that's
because they say that what the people were referring to, you know, didn't exist, didn't happen.
Yeah, that's another story for another episode. I finally found an Edward R. Murrow Flying Saucer Report. It's at CrusadeMax.com. I just sent the link to Maggie. It's for premium members only. So if you want to go listen to that, you can go listen to that. Let me move on to my other reason for having you on here today. And if we had more time, we'd spend more time on the UFO story. But I'll cover it some more next segment. Let's talk about your series here on the Crusade Channel on the assassination of Robert Fitzgerald Kennedy and John Fitzgerald Kennedy, RFK and JFK, RFK and JFK. I remember in the series you covering the alleged assassination of RFK Jr. by Sirhan Sirhan. And you made the statement on the first episode, Sirhan Sirhan did not shoot Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Of course, everyone goes like, what? Well, RFK Jr. is on a podcast yesterday with Mike Tyson, the former heavyweight champ of the world, And RFK Jr. tells Mike Tyson, Sirhan did not assassinate my father. And then he tells him the story of who did. So what can you tell us about it? So is Bobby Kennedy nuts or is he telling the truth?
He's not nuts. He's not nuts. Well, there's a couple of things you can't do in this life. One is you can't not pay the IRS. And the other thing is you can't violate the laws of physics. It just doesn't happen. So just at a very basic level, Sirhan B. Sirhan,
okay.
Was standing in front of RFK. And RFK was shot from behind, four shots, I believe, and one.
That's it. That's exactly what Bobby said. Yes, that's exactly what Bobby said.
Yeah, and a couple little anomalies, I guess. Sirhan had a 22, and it holds 8 rounds. The acoustic analysis of the tape identified 13 shots. So back to the basic physics problem again of getting 13 rounds into an 8-round gun. It doesn't work, obviously. And there was a speculation that there could have been up to 3 people. I mean, who walks around with a note in his pocket that says, you know, RFK must die? I mean, right? If you're going to go out and... how many other people in the world who have gone out, done an assassination, and had the name of the person that they were going to assassinate written on a note that they stuck in their pocket? How convenient.
It's great if you're it's great if you're the U.S. attorney prosecuting the case.
Sure. Makes it a little bit easier, I think.
Okay, so Bobby Kennedy, you named one of the guys. Okay, so here's what Bobby Kennedy told Mike Tyson. I'm going to play you the audio later, folks. I'm going to let RFK Jr. Say it in his own words. But he said, just as Greg just said, Sirhan B. Sirhan was standing in front of Bobby Kennedy. The first shot that he shot at RFK, shot at him twice. The first one missed at head level and lodged in a door jamb behind him. The second one hit, and he names the guy, hit him square in the head. So he hit that's the human target. At this time, Sirhan is tackled, basically, and they're trying to get the gun out of his hand, but apparently he has some superhuman strength. And they're unable to, and with the gun still in his hand, he fires 4 more times, or 6 more times, depending on whose story you believe. Is that what you believe? Is that the official account?
I think so. Yeah, 6 more times after he was down and under police control.
Okay, so describe then in your account of the story, what happens while Sirhan is on the ground and the Secret Service and the cops are all focused on him.
Well, they're not looking around the room. They're not looking anywhere else. I mean, there's, the episode of reverse deception that I did on this, right? I got one out of the gate, and then I got a phone call, and I was told cease and desist, no more RFK assassination shows, even though I got the approval for the show. Don't do any more of those. So having said that, I find it extremely troubling that the district attorney did not or would not consider any of the legitimate evidence. I mean, think of it like this. Sirhan had a 22. He had a revolver. We're not talking about, you know, a magazine-fed semi-automatic handgun where you can pop the magazine, pop another one in, and keep shooting away, right? This is a revolver. You actually have to manually pop it open, put new bullets in, start shooting again.
That's right.
There's just on the surface of that alone, there's no way you could have convicted this guy. And this evidence, I mean... The discussion of how many shots And the physician of Sirhan Sirhan did come out with the autopsy report that the prosecutors gave to the defense at the trial. But they still convicted Sirhan Sirhan. And then it was opened up again a number of years later when Bobby Kennedy started doing the investigation and looking into it more deeply. And the volume of information that he came out with was tremendous. And they still wouldn't go back and take a look at the case again. Meaning that if you're going to control the narrative on something, you want to control all aspects of it. Therefore, probably you would need to look at the jurors to see where they came from, their background, you know, who they were. Are they, you know, are they paid by the CIA? I don't know. The judge, why did they choose that judge? Why is it in, you know, that courtroom specifically? There's a lot of other things that should be or should have been considered that haven't been considered in this case. And I would also venture to say that anything that takes a long time to come out probably has a lot of truth behind it. And Sirhan Sirhan definitely needs an honest day in court.
So we're on the Dude Maker hotline here with Greg Carpenter from Reverse Deception Radio here on the Crusade Channel. I believe that this episode that he is referring to is still on the Crusade Channel, and I'm sure that I can find it and that I can I can publish it at the all-new CrusadeMax.com. But let's go to something else that RFK Jr. Said to Mike Tyson about this in this podcast that was recorded yesterday. So he said that here's what happened, and again, I'll play you the audio. He said the shots, my father was shot four times. He said one of the bullets went through grazed off his upper right shoulder and went through the padding of his shoulder pad on his blazer. The other three that entered his body, and he started the interview off, Greg, was saying that he was pleaded with by a friend of the family. He said, Bobby, you must come with me and you must view the autopsy report. You're never mm-hmm. going to know what happened to your father if you don't view, you have to view the autopsy. So he said that he went and viewed, reviewed the autopsy report. And this is where he could see that the autopsy showed that Bobby Kennedy, RFK Jr., was shot from a low trajectory. The bullets came from someone who was either lying on the ground or was seated and was firing and shooting up at him. Is that your understanding?
That's correct.
So how could that have been? I mean, that indicates, okay, so it wasn't Sirhan Sirhan because Sirhan Sirhan's in front of Bobby. So then it has to be someone else then, correct?
Well, it would stand to reason, yes. And remember, you know, in the official report, the police said that Sirhan Sirhan only got off 2 to 3 shots before he was tackled. That's it. So if Kennedy was hit with 4 shots, he couldn't have shot Kennedy 4 times.
That's right.
So you'd have to actually have analysis of the bullets to see and do the ballistics on it and see and identify the type of the other type of .22 that was used to shoot Kennedy. It's just that simple. It doesn't get it much easier than that. And none of that. The defense attorney, Cooper, I think his name was Cooper, he decided not to argue the point that Sirhan Sirhan shot the one bullet that killed Kennedy. Right, and I don't know how they figured out how that happened, but he didn't argue that one point, and that's the one point that stuck.
Okay, a point about the interview that RFK Jr. gave to Mike Tyson. That was broadcast on YouTube live yesterday. They then set it to public viewing so anyone could watch the video and could download it. YouTube has now deleted the video. The video's gone. So the only reason that the video is still up is because the former heavyweight champion of the world, Mike Tyson, got it out to other people who then published it and uploaded it to Twitter. So you can now see it on Twitter here. So, Greg, a final question, because I know you're busy and you actually have a real job these days. Why does what for the listeners out there and for me?
Why did he need to be killed?
Why did RFK need to be killed, and why did it need to be covered up? Is there a why here? Can you help us? Can you give us a why?
I think it goes back to the first topic we were talking about.
Okay. UFOs.
The UAP topic.
UAPs, right.
Yep. UAP, well, whatever you want to call them these days. You know, there's a lot of information available about RFK, JFK, and their discussion. Part of the comments that he made about the CIA back in the day were that, you know, he had been briefed on whatever some of these projects were that are going on about UAPs or UFOs back in the day, and he had a high interest in it. And he was looking to get information out to the public because he didn't believe in government secrecy. And you can look and see how fast Bill Clinton got off the UFO high horse, saying, "Oh, I'm going to make sure everybody knows everything about this." Oh wait, look.
Catch all new terrifying radio on Classics on Terror on Tuesdays beginning at 7 p.m. East, 4 West, here on the Crusade Channel. And catch up on episodes you miss as podcasts at podcast.crusadechannel.com. Classic radio, the way it should be.
Hello, Crusaders. I'm Janet Huxley at the Crusade Channel News Desk with your Crusade Channel Crucials for Tuesday, June the 6th, 2023. This report is brought to you by McClure Tables, using Michigan hardwoods in Michigan to make the best made-in-the-USA shuffleboards on the market. Shuffle on over to McClureTables.com. That's M-C-C-L-U-R-E Tables.com. In the market report, the S&P and
the TV reporter, and she was found dead of an overdose.
Oh, there's so many of them. Which one?
From the 50s. She was on What's My Line?
Dorothy Kilgallen,
right. So Dorothy Kilgallen. So she was involved with this also. And I made a point. I don't remember which show it was. Oh, it was a Kennedy assassination show, because she is one of the, she's listed on the JFK witness list, and they don't actually identify what she knew. But other people, they did list what they knew. And of the people that were on that witness list that were supposed to testify, 236 of them died early or of unnatural deaths. A couple of them are listed as killed by CIA assassins. Mm. So, yeah, there's some pretty substantial evidence that strange things were going on. If, you know, in the Church Commission, when they, you know, when William Colby was sitting there telling Congress that, oh yeah, we have a dart gun that we can shoot you with, and it'll inject the poison, make it look like a heart attack, and then the needle dissolves, the dart falls off, and there's no mark, and you look like you just had a heart attack at a young age, and that's it. And how many more of these types of things do they have that they are using? I don't know. But a lot of people in the JFK witness list died of sudden heart attacks at very young ages.
I know I said this, that was going to be my last question, but Trump did release. I mean, we now have, with a few redactions, we now have the complete Warren Commission report and the complete investigation that was conducted by the FBI on the Kennedy assassination. I mean, this came out what Trump released is what, 2020, or I think it was in 2020. Yeah.
Didn't it fill?
You and I haven't had any shows since then, but did it fill any gaps in for you?
Nope.
So you knew everything that was in the report. So that
report gave the people exactly what they wanted, more information, and it didn't answer any questions, and it didn't help anybody identify what really happened to JFK.
That's it.
Because the FBI was, the FBI is just a tool, right?
Absolutely.
They do what they're told.
Filled with tools.
Indeed. Indeed they are. So they really aren't there to serve the public. They're there to protect the government. Just like the Inspector General's office, their job is to ensure that the government doesn't suffer any embarrassment or legal problems and things get fixed before they get out to the public. The FBI does the heavy lifting work. We'll call it that.
I just want to just say to the audience, and to especially if you're a new listener, you're watching us on Rumble today and you're watching us for the first time, this is why you need to be a Founders Past member and subscriber here, because this is what we do here. But I just want to say to the audience here that I've been saying, Greg, that RFK Jr. is running for the presidency as a Democrat. All right. We despise Democrats in the entire party. But there has to be, no one is looking at this properly, in my humble opinion, that there's a reason why at this juncture with all the stuff that's happening here, that the son of a former or the nephew of a former president and the son of a former presidential candidate and the United States attorney, U.S. Attorney Bobby Kennedy, the attorney general, rather, there has to be a reason why at this juncture and as late in his life, because he stayed out of the family business, he stayed out of politics, why RFK Jr. is running for president. And I have to tell you, I feel duty bound to tell anyone that asked me, and KV Turley asked me yesterday, I believe that Bobby Kennedy Jr. is a patriot. He's a patriotic guy. I think that he's doing this because he loves his country, he loves his kids, he loves Greg's kids. He loves baby Sasquatch. He loves my kids. And I also have to think that he's doing this to try and either salvage what remains of the Democrat Party and to take it back from the criminals that are running it. But I must also say at the same time, full disclosure here, that when he sits down with Mike Tyson and he starts talking about what really happened to his father, I mean, knowing the way these guys operate, Greg, he's playing with... I can't bring myself to say what's on my mind here, but you can all figure it out. He's playing with fire here. He's almost like when I'm taunting them, going like, I'm going to rat all of you out. You know, because last week he was outside a hog production facility, ratting out the hog production industry that's now run by the Chinese and makes all our bacon and our sausage. So, Bob, I mean, he is now trafficking or running in the family trade. So what is your read on RFK Jr. as a presidential candidate, knowing that you, as the author of Reverse Deception, you know, you're still kind of working in the intelligence biz. You were Army intelligence for almost two decades. What's your view on this?
He started voicing his opposition to the Sirhan conviction about 5 years ago.
Okay.
Just not really getting very, very loud about it, but bringing the point out that, hey, wait a minute, something's not right here. And he attempted to get the U.S. attorney to review the data and do the right thing. I think he's still this part of it. Maybe it's you know, maybe there's some political motivation, but I think this aspect of it, he's still looking to get justice for Sirhan and identify, you know, the person who really killed his father. On one hand, on the other hand, I think that he's having a self-discovery moment as he's moving through this journey of, oh, wait a minute, wait, this is even more corrupt than I thought. Well, this is even more corrupt than I thought. And I think that's where he's at right now.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can imagine the level of depravity that we're dealing with here when it comes to these intelligence agencies. And we know what they did to Donald Trump. You know, the media, the people in the media are still out there in denial. They're still out there spouting off Russia, Russia, Russia. There are people that are still in denial that Hunter Biden's laptop doesn't exist. They're in denial that Hunter Biden's laptop does not exist, but now flying objects from the Andromeda galaxy do.
Our misinformation program will be complete once everything the American people believe is a lie.
Okay, so Sirhan is still alive. He's in jail.
I think he is.
He was just denied parole, Maggie's telling me.
The board denied in 2021.
So in 2021, he was denied parole again here. Has he maintained that he's innocent this entire, that he did not shoot RFK Jr.?
I think after the initial I did do it, he was definitely saying that he didn't do it. But he has no memory. I think that's the more important thing, is that he still has no memory of it. And this is where the concept of the Manchurian candidate came from, was with Sirhan, is that he didn't know what he was doing. Like, he was under some type of hypnosis at the time. So he would be like the perfect patsy.
Wow. An incredible story. Folks, again, RFK Jr., in a podcast interview with the former heavyweight champ of the world, Mike Tyson, yesterday, revealed in a very long, it's a 10-minute long clip, what actually happened to his father, RFK Jr. Was that in 1968, Greg? 67?
Yeah, I think 68, yeah.
1968, when Bobby, and it was at the Ambassador Hotel, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that's in Washington or in New York?
I thought it was in California.
It was in California, okay. So at the Ambassador Hotel, and the video was put up on YouTube yesterday. It's since been deleted. You can now find it on Twitter. We have it. We went ahead and downloaded that part of it from the podcast. And he's basically saying that the official story is not true. That's not what happened to my father. The CIA, FBI, they all covered it up, and they're still covering it up, and here's what actually happened. And he also, Greg, has there ever been, in your research, are there any suspects of who the shooter might have been that was behind RFK Jr. that morning?
No, there was some interesting discussion. There was some talk about two guys who somebody had identified them as CIA guys, and it was later shown that they were executives of the Bull of a Watch company that were having some type of convention at the hotel at the time. But just because they work for Bull of it doesn't mean they're not CIA, right?
That's right. It's a watch company. Get it?
Yeah. There was that. There's the lady with the polka dot dress who kind of like showed up, was extremely mysterious, caused a lot of ruckus, just in a very sublime way, and was seen with Sirhan and then disappeared. And they couldn't seem to find her. So there's a couple of loose ends that have never been closed. And I don't know that there's others who might have been suspects at the time.
It's an interesting day when Alex Jones seems like the only sane man remaining in major broadcast media circles.
Mr. Church, when the mass group of general population is running towards the cliff, the guy who looks like the guy who's walking away from the cliff looks like the idiot.
Well, I hope to be that idiot. He is Greg Carpenter, and the radio show and the book is Reverse Deception. Can you still get Reverse Deception in bookstores?
You can. You can. They still have it brick and mortar places. I've seen it in a few places. Barnes & Noble, it's there.
Do we have any copies, Maggie?
The easiest thing is Amazon.
Do we have any copies?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, no.
Okay, we don't have any copies. Why don't I have any copies, Mr.
Gorman? Oh.
Send me a box of Reverse Deception to sell.
Oh, pardon me, sir.
I will send you my new shipping address.
Okay, yeah, do that. Hey, yeah. We'll get them over to you.
All right. And Greg is also the host of Someday Soon. I will be releasing the three-part series on the Irish potato famine, which, if you're Irish, is a must. Wow. Yeah, you must listen to this, or you must know this. It's actually ready to go. I just haven't released it. All available at crusademax.com. We have the series on the UN. Greg did TWA Flight 800, the U.S. bioweapons program, and then Greg's research into the origins of the cult of death. Which, by the way, you know, Greg, and I had forgotten about this, Greg, in his presentation on the Margaret Sanger and the eugenics movement and all that, he did cover the Weimar Republic part of it that Frank Wright has been covering with us the last couple of weeks here. These things are all interrelated here. It's almost like we have a cinematic universe of evil. it's all interconnected. Yeah, it all goes back to Baphomet. Greg, thank you for extending the time with us. It's always great to hear from you. And I hope to hear from you more often, brother. Are you staying internationally busy, or are you U.S. bound now?
No, I'm internationally busy. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be leaving for a flight here soon.
Okay, all right. Well, safe travels. God bless you, and Mary keep you, and thank you very much.
God bless. Thanks, Mike.